It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. For the first time, Russian warplanes used an Iranian airbase to attack Syrian targets. U.S. Defense spokesman Colonel Chris Garver in Iraq said the U.S.-led coalition cleared the way for the Russian planes to carry out their missions.
The Russians did notify the coalition as per the Memorandum of Understanding for Safety of Flight. They activated that system as we have in the past. They informed us they were coming through, and we ensured safety of flight as those bombers pass through the area and toward their target.
U.S. spokesman Mark Toner in Washington indicated Tuesday the Russians are not just going after militant groups like Islamic State.
It's unfortunate, but not surprising or unexpected. And I think it speaks to the continuation of a pattern that we've seen of Russia continuing to carry out airstrikes, and now it appears with Iran's direct assistance, that at least purport to target ISIL and Daesh targets, as well as Nusra targets, but in fact, predominantly target moderate Syrian opposition forces.
Moscow said the strikes hit five large warehouses with weapons, ammunition, and fuel in the training camps of Islamic State and Jabhat al-Nusra terror group in the provinces of Aleppo, Deir ez-Zor, and Idlib. Police in Zambia arrested dozens of opposition protesters Tuesday after incumbent President Edgar Lungu was declared winner of last week's hotly contested election that the opposition charged was tainted. The opposition United Party for National Development said the narrow victory will be contested in the country's constitutional court, likely delaying Mr. Lungu's inauguration. Electoral Commission results show the incumbent taking just over 50% of the popular vote, bypassing a second-round ballot. This is VOA News. Turkish prosecutors are demanding a long prison sentence for exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, accused of being behind last month's failed military coup. The state-run Anadolu news agency said after a year-long investigation, prosecutors demanded Gulen be punished with two life terms and 1,900 more years in prison. Turkey is demanding his extradition from the U.S. Meanwhile, a pro-Kurdish newspaper, the Özgür Gündem, has been closed after being accused of engaging in terrorist propaganda. The editor's, the paper's editor-in-chief, Zana Kaya, said the government is capturing all state mechanisms to build a dictatorship and shape the country the way it wants to. Turkey, under a state of emergency, has closed dozens of media outlets in the weeks following the coup attempt. State media reported police raided more than 40 companies in Istanbul in connection with last month's attempted coup. A Palestinian teenager was shot dead Tuesday in clashes with Israeli forces at a refugee camp near the West Bank city Hebron. The Israeli military said it was searching for weapons in the Fawar refugee camp when Palestinians began throwing rocks and explosives at troops. In New York, Oscar Morel appeared in court Tuesday, denying charges that he shot and killed a Muslim cleric and his associate Saturday outside a mosque in the borough of Queens. Morel was charged with one count of first-degree murder, two counts of second-degree murder, and two counts of criminal possession of a handgun, faces life in prison without parole if convicted in the killing of Bangladeshi cleric Maulama Akunji and Tharauddin. Fakhrul Islam Delwar is a Bangladeshi New York community leader.
The community strongly believe it's a hate crime because these are two peaceful men coming from their worship, you know, coming from their, you know, mosque. It's clear to us that it's a hate crime, but it's up to the system how they looks at it. But the community strongly wants to, you know, this case to be taken as a hate crime.
Authorities say the suspect's motive in the alleged shootings remains unclear. Police in Guinea Tuesday fired at opposition protesters in Conakry, killing at least one, wounding at least two others. The anti-government protests were aimed at the West African country's ailing economy and government corruption. An Ethiopian court has charged nearly two dozen South Sudanese refugees with the murders of 10 Ethiopians at a refugee camp in April. The attack took place in western Gambala region after two South Sudanese children died in a car accident. In Rio Olympic action Tuesday, Kenya's Faith Kipyegon won the 1,500-meter gold, outpacing the favored Genzebe Diababa of Ethiopia. Three Chinese women won the team table tennis gold, and Chinese athlete also took gold in the men's individual 3-meter springboard diving event. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Wednesday, August 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambia's government defends the arrest of 150 opposition election protesters.
They have set fire to vehicles. They have held hostage over 12 people who are supporters of the ruling party. So they have been arrested for arson. Others have been arrested for public disorder. Others have been arrested for assault.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu, but the opposition UPND says those arrested are innocent. South Sudan's justice minister says department lacks the capacity to try criminals from last month's violence. And the parents of abducted Chibok girls urged the Nigerian government to negotiate their freedom.
The message I have for the federal government is for them to release the fighters so that the fighters will release the girls. To me, the federal government have failed.
Esther Yakubu is the mother of one of the missing Chibok girls. Hundreds of thousands turned out for anti-government protests in Guinea. This morning, a spotlight on illegal drug users in Liberia's capital. And some Ghanaians studying in the United States fulfilled their Olympic dream. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Zambian government is defending the arrest of nearly 150 supporters of main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, UPND, over the results of last Thursday's presidential election. The Zambian Electoral Commission said incumbent Edgar Lungu won re-election with more than 50% of the vote, while Hichilema garnered just under 48%. But Hichilema supporters, particularly in the opposition stronghold of the southern province, say their candidate won and they are willing to die to ensure his victory. Amos Chanda, spokesman for President Lungu, says those arrested are criminals, not election protesters, because some of them committed arson, took ruling party supporters hostage, and disturbed public order.
They have set fire to vehicles. They have held hostage over 12 people who are supporters of the ruling party. They have barricaded the main highway from Lusaka to Livingstone, the capital city, and they've set fire to three market stores in Monze, Mazabuka. Mazabuka is a town 130 kilometers south of the capital, and they have set fire to one of the houses of a PF ruling party supporter. So they have been arrested for arson. Others have been arrested for public disorder. Others have been arrested for assault. To set fire to a house is arson. It's a very dangerous offense because it can end up, it can result in people being killed. So more arrests will be made because police have intensified their action in the south of the country.
The protesters, they believe that their leader, Mr. Hichilema, won the election.
How can he win at 47% when the incumbent president has 51%? The difference between the winner and the loser is that Mr. Hichilema has 47.6% of the vote. And the Constitution says the winning threshold for a presidential candidate is 50% of the vote plus one vote. So Mr. Hichilema got 47%. President Lungu got 51.4% of the vote.
I spoke with the deputy spokesperson of the UPND. Mr. Muitwa was telling me that the party, although it's going to the Constitutional Court, it has no hope because the justices on the Constitutional Court are appointed by President Lungu. So the outcome is a foregone conclusion that the court is going to side with the president.
Why is he going there? Isn't that a foolish thing to do if he believes that that will not be the case there? Why is their party going to the Constitutional Court? Last week, the Constitutional Court made a very controversial decision where they ruled against the president and said that his decision to keep ministers in office for the last 3 months was illegal. And they made orders, such orders, as far as ordering the ministers to repay their salaries. That was 2 days before election. On the 9th, they made that decision. And 1 week later, the same judges now have been doubted. The UPND and their friends took the matter to court, and there was that decision by the Constitutional Court.
Back to the demonstrations and the people believed to have been arrested. Does this mean that your government does not allow any protest after the results of the election?
If somebody came to your house and painted down, is that a protest? he set fire to a building. You get a bus full of 66 passengers, and you set it on fire. Is that a protest? You dig a crater in the highway and set a booby trap so that buses carrying as many as 80 people can come and overturn. Is that a protest? In our definition of a crime, those fit into a crime and not a protest.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Supporters of Zambian opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, UPND, particularly in the opposition stronghold of the southern province, say their candidate won and are willing to die to ensure Hichilema's victory. Since the results were announced on Monday, the government has arrested nearly 150 opposition protesters, saying they committed criminal acts. But Cornelius Mwitwa, a member of parliament and deputy UPND spokesman, says those arrested are innocent.
Well, I can confirm that a number of people have been arrested. They are talking of 130. About 40 thereabouts are from my constituency, which is Choma Central constituency, the provincial headquarters of the southern province. And I can confirm that all those people who have been arrested had completely nothing to do with the instability or unrest that ensued after the announcement of the elections. People did take to the streets in protest against a stolen election. But as you would imagine, the police went just to arrest people like for ransom, just to show the state or the ruling party to say, we have some people we have arrested for this instability, even when those people are completely innocent. And people are being clamped on just for being identified to be opposition. Their houses are being torched. They are being attacked from markets. They are being attacked from bus stations. It's unacceptable. This is not a Zambia we knew before.
As I was telling you, I spoke with presidential spokesman Amos Chanda, and he said that those people arrested were not protesting the outcome of the election. They were just destroying property.
Well, of course, that is what you expect to come out of a person like Amos Chanda, who was, before he was given that job, was a journalist who, in the Zambian sense, was an average person. And to have given him that particular job, he's ready to say anything because that is what he's paid for to do. There is no way people can just wake up to go and destroy property for nothing. People were trying to register their displeasure over the stolen election, which everybody else knows. It's a sham.
Cornelius Mwitwa is a member of parliament and deputy spokesman of the opposition United Party for National Development of Zambia. He was speaking with me from Lusaka. South Sudan's justice minister says his department lacks the capacity to try soldiers suspected of committing rape and other crimes during last month's violence in the capital, Juba. Paulino Wanawila Onango says he wants to investigate all cases brought to his attention, but his ministry does not have the resources or enough competent employees to handle all justice-related matters facing the transitional government of national unity. Tito Justin, a VOA South Sudan in Focus program, reports from Juba.
Justice Minister Wanawila says in order for the peace agreement to be implemented effectively, South Sudan must be supported to build the capacity of its institutions, including the judiciary.
We need to train more judges. We need to train more lawyers, prosecutors. We need to train our police to respect the rule of law, and then train our other organized forces to apply the law, to respect the rule of law. And even ourselves, we as civilians, we also have to respect the law. Because if you see what happened the other time, people complain about their houses being broken into, being looted, and being things being happening to them.
Wanawila says some traditional customs, such as alien marriages, contradict the country's constitution. He says his ministry needs more support to train community leaders on how to find a balance between customary law and legal law. He says some South Sudanese take the law into their own hands and resort to revenge killings because they don't trust the judiciary system to carry out justice. The justice minister says the court system is important because it allows the weak to seek justice and those wrongly accused of committing crimes to clear their names.
You need to develop it constantly. Also, you need to have appropriate formal justice all over the country, whereby you have courts and you have people to assess to justice And also you need to have the rule of law, which is well observed and enforced.
Wanawila says his ministry needs more competent prosecutors in order to carry out its responsibilities. UK's ambassador to South Sudan, Tim Morris, says his government is willing to support South Sudan as the country tries to establish institutions of rule of law.
The British government's continual support for South Sudan and the people of South Sudan. This is a moment when we need all to think carefully about how we work together for the future of this country, and you will find that my country will be a part of that process.
The military earlier on said it has established a general court-martial to try soldiers accused of raping women and committing other crimes during last month's fighting. Military spokesman Brigadier Lul Roy Kong said Despele already sentenced to death two soldiers in Wao and has detained 19 other soldiers accused of committing crimes against civilians in Juba. Wanawila says the courts must prosecute those suspected of committing crimes not only during the recent violence, but since the conflict began.
Organized forces, including the SPLA now, has arrested some people and is investigating, and some are even taken to the court. This is what we want to see happen continuously, not just for this crisis.
The South Sudan peace deal signed a year ago calls for establishing an independent hybrid court to try all those suspected of committing crimes since the conflict erupted in December 2013. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
Today's Wednesday, August 17th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Boko Haram's offer this week of a prisoner swap to free the kidnapped Chibok girls has sparked a debate in Nigeria over how the government should respond. The parents of the girls are urging the government to negotiate. Chiga Odua reports for VOA from Abuja.
Very soon, her family will come for breakfast. But in quiet moments like this, Esther Yakubu thinks about her daughter, Dorcas Maida. This picture was taken in 2014, just days before Dorcas and nearly 300 of her classmates were kidnapped by Boko Haram from their school in the town of Chibok in northeastern Nigeria. She was 15 years old at the time.
A message to my daughter.
I thank you because of the heart God gave you. It's because of God that you are still alive.
On Sunday, Boko Haram released a video showing as many as 50 of the Chibok girls. Dorcas Maida was among them. She was singled out to deliver a message to her family and to the Nigerian government. We are suffering, she says. Release the Boko Haram members so that we can get our freedom. Seeing her daughter triggers mixed emotions for Esther. There's frustration, grief, relief. Esther has been an active member of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign, pressuring the Nigerian government to rescue the girls from Boko Haram. At least 217 girls are still missing.
The message I have for the federal government is for them to release the fighters so that the fighters will release the girls. To me, the federal government have failed. 2 years, 4 months. They say they don't even have vital information of the whereabouts of the girls. If they do not do something, the girls will be killed.
The Yakubu family comes together for breakfast. Hot porridge made from rice and groundnuts. There's Yabu, the father. 15-year-old daughter Happy. Marvelous is 12. There's 8-year-old Ibrahim and 6-year-old Mercy. They all know that someone is missing, Dorcas Maida. And Esther vows to keep raising her voice to get her daughter back. Chika Odua for VOA News, Abuja.
Hundreds of thousands of opposition supporters in Guinea took to the streets on Tuesday in a massive show of force to demand the government hold municipal elections. Ousmane Diallo, a member of the executive committee of the main opposition Union of Democratic Forces of Guinea, says the protesters also criticized alleged economic mismanagement and corruption in President Alpha Condé's government. Guinea's last local elections were held in December 2005. The Independent Electoral Commission, SINE, last year postponed holding the local elections until after the 2015 presidential polls, despite opposition demand that local elections take place before presidential election. Diallo says President Condé is to blame.
The opposition organized a big demonstration to denounce the corruption, bad governance, nepotism, the refusal of government to organize the municipal and local election. That's the subject to our demonstration today.
So when are the municipal elections supposed to take place?
We haven't a municipal and local election to 2010. We need to have election to December 2010.
We hear that some of the protesters were calling for President Alpha Condé to resign. Is that true?
Because he created the problem, because the World Committee to organize this election, the CENI, don't take any possibility to organize this election. We have a right, we have a problem with our legal system. We have a problem to the method of organize this election. But in assembly, we haven't the possibility to change the rights, actually. And the government take anything to organize this election. We think the government don't need to organize this election. That's the problem.
As an opposition member, do you believe that President Alpha Condé, who was elected last year, is doing a very good job in handling the economy?
We have many crises in Guinea. We have an economic crisis. We have a social crisis. We have a political crisis in Guinea. The opposition called the government to rapid opening of dialogue because we have to risk to having a major crisis. And they organize this election or explain to the opposition what the problem we have to don't organize. If you haven't the capacity to organize this, we can call him in dialogue. But he went to dialogue. He went to organize the election. We haven't any contact with this government.
Ousmane Diallo is a member of the Executive Committee of the main opposition Union of Democratic Forces of Guinea. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. All attempts to reach government spokesman Albert Damatin Kamara were fruitless. Illegal drug use is becoming a problem in Liberia, particularly in the many ghettos in and around the capital, Monrovia. Titi Gibro visited the notorious Turtle Base in the bustling red light market area of the city, host to about 1,000 illegal drug users and dealers, and reports.
The only entrance to the base is a rope tied between two stores. Two young women sitting on a bench asked me to pay a little amount of money before entering. I gave them 40 Liberian dollars, just under 50 US cents, and I'm allowed to enter this wide open field with many small huts covered with old torn up rice bags. Young people of all ages cluster, sniffing substances of all kinds. Among them are women, some pregnant, while others breastfeed their babies.
We are spoiling, and somehow we are capable of being a policeman, soldier man, immigration, doing any other job, but no job facilities. So what we're doing here, we can only get money to eat, smoke.
Where do you sleep?
Outside, I see open. In the net, people spread a cartoon, a mat, and lay down.
Abu Kamara and his friends and their female partners sleep on cardboard boxes and straw mats in the open. 40-year-old Beatrice Walker, who is breastfeeding her 10-month-old baby boy, tells me she has been in the streets living on drugs out of frustration after she was thrown out of a previous relationship in 1996. Beatrice says she has given birth to three children on Turtle Base, including the 10-month-old baby she is now nursing. She is not happy with her current condition. Beatrice says life would be much better for she and her friends if there were a rehab center.
Nothing made me to be on the street. Only the habit. If I can do the habit, I can be on the street again. But the drugs are smoking, and what made me on the street? Me, I can't lie to no one.
Beatrice is not alone. Beatrice and the other women on Turtle Base told me they sell their bodies every night for little or nothing just to get money to buy drugs. They would like for the Liberian government to help them get out of this habit. At the same time, the women accused police officers of beating them and taking their money, a claim police spokesman Sam Collins has rejected, describing the women instead as abnormal people who should not be believed.
To make allegation, one must be credible. And I can tell you for free, I don't make any kind of an allegation. I'm not a credible individual.
What do you mean when you say they are not credible individuals?
Yeah, how can we take drugs as a statement? To be serious. We don't take the allegation very seriously. As somebody who is under the influence of drugs, I don't know how we can proceed with their own statement because they are already in wrong. They are drugs addicts, they are wanted. There are people who are involved with probably some level of prostitution. And all of what they are involved with goes against the state.
John Wallow is a 10-year employee and chief of operations for the Liberian Drug Enforcement Agency. He tells me his agents have raided the famous torture base many times and were able to weed out the drug dealers. But he says they are now operating from unknown locations. Wallow said the DEA is working extremely hard to implement its mandate, but expresses frustration with what he says is the court's inability to understand and properly interpret the drug laws of Liberia. According to Wallow, being caught with illegal drugs is a first-degree felony, and any person found committing a first-degree felony must not be let out of jail on bail as the courts have done, something he calls a misinterpretation of the law. T.T. Jibro, VOA News, Monrovia.
If we look at the roster of track and field athletes at Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, a suburb of Nashville in the southern central United States, you will notice there are more Africans than Americans, and two who attend the school from Ghana are competing at the Rio Olympics. VOA's Park Brewer caught up with them at the athletes' village.
Besides sprinter Janet Amponsa and javelin thrower John Ampona, one of their assistant coaches at Middle Tennessee State, their fellow Ghanaian Andrew Owusu, is also here in Rio helping coach Ghana's athletics team. Owusu said legendary Middle Tennessee head coach Dean Hayes, who is now 77, has a history of recruiting African athletes that dates back to the mid-1970s.
I've had a little bit of criticism of folks say, oh, why Middle Tennessee? Why, how come you have about four Ghanaian athletes there and, you know, more are trying to come there? And I said, well, because we care about them. You know, we care about them beyond sports.
Amponsa ran in the women's 200 meters Monday and was disappointed with her performance. But Owusu told her that his first Olympic experience in 1996 at the Atlanta Games had not gone well either. She fortunately will have another chance in Rio because Amponsa will run on Ghana's 4x100-meter relay team on Thursday. It is ranked in the top 8 of all the entries at the Rio Summer Games. Amponsa told VOA just being at the Olympics is special.
It's a very big achievement for me because it's not everybody in the world who would get this platform to be here. So even if when you come here and you didn't achieve whatever that you wanted to do, it gives you another chance for you to have the experience.
Teammate Ampona will compete in the men's javelin Wednesday night. His ascension in the sport for Ghana has been remarkable. At the 2012 African Championships, he threw 57 meters. Now, 4 years later, he is the Ghanaian record holder at 83.09 meters, and he won the javelin silver medal at last year's All-Africa Games. Amponsa told VOA, though he is proud of the great strides he has made, he is anxious to get his career to the next level.
Sometimes I get disappointed, but when I look back, last 4 years, the distances that I'm throwing compared to now, even though I haven't won any major international or any big championship yet, I still like, if I give myself another five more years to go, I have a long way to go.
He added that sometimes sports is not all about winning, because not everybody can win. It's about being there and giving your best all the time. Park Brewer, VOA News at the Rio Olympics.
And that's it for this Wednesday, August 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.